Dr. Wesson.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. While you're getting ready, let me make an announcement just for the benefit of everyone. Don't forget, next month, Christmas month, we will be meeting on the third Tuesday, which is December the 21st, okay? And we will not have a separation because it looks like fisheries is going to be very light, and hopefully habitat will be relatively light between the fishery matters and the habitat matters. So, Jack, if you can, whoever's going to handle, John, handle the advertisement and make sure that it's indicated that it's a continuous meeting, because I don't think it's going to be much on the fisheries that would, you know, prevent those from attending that needed to attend due to timing. And then hopefully we'll eat lunch after that.
I have a pass, right?
And you've got a pass, yes, sir. Proceed, Dr. Wesson. Thank you.
Just to remind you, this year we did the oyster seasons a little bit different at the request of the Shellfish Management Committee. Instead of staggering seasons, they wanted everything at the same time so that everything came together, and the thought was in their minds that everybody would spread out and maybe less conflicts or something. But we are more than halfway through most of the seasons now. They start October 1st. Most of them are due to close at the end of December. And we did aerial flights on at least once a week in this time period. And what we've seen is that the big areas of activity are where the big areas of oysters were that we knew at the beginning of the season, that they really didn't spread out. If there were oysters there, then all of them piled into the same area. Once they began working those areas down, then they started going out a little bit from the areas, but still the two biggest areas are Drumming Ground, the Area 4 of Rappahannock, where still most of the boats are in that area. Even though the catches are down to probably only 6 bushels per man now average where they started at 10, it's still the best area that we have. And the other big area was the area when we shrunk the wreck shoal sanctuary. It opened up about 6,000 acres that had not been worked in a while, and that was a drawing card for them. And so you can see in the James River area we had pretty high boat amounts, and we were averaging 116 boats per day when we flight, and for the stocks of oysters that we have in Virginia, that's just a very high number of boats. There's no way we can support that number of boats for a full 3-month season in any of these areas, so the numbers of oysters have declined. We have not finished still the survey. I mean, we were shooting to be ready by now, but primarily have all the data ready for you for the December meeting should it become an issue. But at the Shellfish Management Committee, it was pretty obvious that the committee members were resigned to the fact that they had chosen this season and that the numbers were playing out. And there were a few feeble attempts of asking for opening different areas up.
We specifically, I mean, you can pull the minutes.
I know
what was said.
I mean, they were pretty quickly put it down and did not.
I appreciate their responsibility, but that's.
It was a very pleasant meeting, and I think.
That's good.
You know, even though everything's played out pretty quickly, we've had a fairly good year in that area in Rappahannock. It'll probably end up being 25,000 bushels or so in that one area for us. And for Virginia standards, that's quite good. But just to give you a few highlights from that meeting, as well as the what we're seeing on this year's survey, and I can do more in December if you want, or more in January when we do replenishment. This is one picture that highlights a very big concern of the Shellfish Committee, and that is seeing this crash. I mean, that's what's going on in Mobjack. I mean, 2000. We knew it was going down because we had a big spasset in the entire bay in 2006. And by now, in 2010, either most of those oysters have been harvested or they're dying from disease. So the number of stocks are going down. Next year is going to be a very, very hard year for us because we've not had a set since 2006. There's not much left anywhere. We've had a great set in a lot of areas in 2010 this year. It's going to be several years before they come back in the fishery. But this highlights an area that they're really concerned about, and the dark blue is market oysters, and that is understandable, that comes from the harvest and disease and everything. But what the committee was real concerned with is how the number of small oysters has actually declined at a just as rapid a rate. And it was, the committee made a really big plea that they are seeing way, way too many small oysters leave in boats when nobody's looking, that, you know, when they are culled on the shore, they've either thrown them overboard or they've done something else, and it really needs to be an effort to do the culling in the boats, in the field, before they get to the shore, because, I mean, basically, this small portion of the fishery is doing this, is stealing from them for the next year, because they're taking the small ones, and you can see in our stock assessment that those small ones have just disappeared in this area, so there won't be anything left in Majak next year. Just to highlight a few of the other areas, this is Great Wicomico, in the area that, you know, the big core experiment, which had the big peak in those years, and it's steadily declining over time. This is not a harvested area. This is an area that's just being going down naturally. The Piankatank is doing very well. I mean, we've kind of followed the same track that we have in the Great Wicomico. The difference in the Great Wicomico and the Piankatank is that we're more actively managing the Piankatank. We're taking seed out. We're putting shells back. For the Great Wicomico, we decided to leave it alone and see if it would take off on its own. And Piankatank stuff looks very good. We've had the biggest set in the Piankatank this year that I've seen since I've been at VMRC. The same thing in the James River. We're doing pretty good up at a peak time on the James. We got more market oysters than we've seen in a while. I think we need to be concerned about the James River, because come December, end of December, the James River Hantong area will be the only area open for the next 4 months. And we'll have to watch that closely to make sure we don't get too much activity there. But at this point, it looks very good. And actually, we thought we had a great set in 2008, biggest we'd ever seen, but we actually had a bigger spat set this year than we had in 2008. So even though, you know, there's some down things, we're actually seeing signs of the management strategies that we have working. I mean, the two best areas that we have right now are these areas that we have in rotation in Tangier and Rappahannock. And, we did make the right choice in going back in Area 4 this year, because Area 1 does not have as much, and it was good to give that an extra year to continue to recuperate.
But, Jim, can I ask you a question on the James River?
Yeah.
Had a call from industry, and we've been dealing with some issues right around the hand scrape line as far as going north of it and west of it problematically. What would be the consequences of extending that area to the west? And I know you said things are looking good, but what would happen if we did extend the area and give the watermen an opportunity to work the hand scrapes in that area for, let's say, the next couple of months? Would it have the devastating consequences in your mind, or exactly what would be the ramifications of doing that?
Well, this is the old sanctuary, the lighter green, and the hand scrape line is supposed to go from here to here over right. This way a little bit. It doesn't follow, it doesn't track this line. But this is the main area that they've been trying to slide into, and they see that it's very easy right now. But this area is very amenable to hand scrapes. You can see, I mean, the hand tongs. It's shallow. You can see the depths there, 7, 9. The densities are good enough in there that they could make money hand tonging.
Okay.
But hand scraping is easier. It's easier, but it's much more
a lot more destructive. Efficient slash destructive can be the same thing.
This area that we have from where this hands, we stopped the hand scrape line there for a purpose. The reefs look very different east of that hand scrape line than they do west when you're in the seed beds. And even though wreck shoals, this area that they're working in, grows a different shaped orchard that they're interested in, it still is clustering. It still looks like a seed rock, and we still have wonderful spathe sets in this area where we don't have such wonderful spathe sets down in this lower area. So what we're doing is, it seems to be correct, and you know, we've already made a big leap in faith that, that shrinking the sanctuary to from 7,700 is something we could do. And if you pile on right now a more efficient gear type in this area with that, I think
exponentially problematic.
Yeah, we could definitely get into some problems. The one recommendation that came out of the committee that, again, we would like to have considered for a January public hearing, because the Drummond Garden area closes up at the end of this month, and then it reopens for a month in February. And we are afraid that since that's the only thing that's open, and everybody will try to pile into that area thinking that they can go back to that 10 bushel per man limit. They're already down to 6. And so we're recommending, and the committee went along with it, that we lower the per man limit for Drummond Garden to 6, just psychologically as a deterrent for somebody thinking that they can pick up from somewhere and go work in that area, because it shouldn't be, they should know that the numbers are down. And that was approved by the committee, and so we'd like to advertise that for a public hearing in January, so that in February when it reopens, it's a 6 bushel limit for that one area for that 1 month.
That matters before the commission.
So moved.
So moved.
Mr. Plumlee. Motion made by Mr. Plumlee, seconded by Mr. Fox. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Public hearing will be held.
Who made that motion?
Mr. Plumlee made it. Mr. Fox seconded it.
You get paid extra.
Do you want to do anything on law enforcement report in that area, or is there any need? He's here. Colonel Rhodes is here.
You know, the committee was as incensed about enforcement as I've ever seen them, and I think
absolutely
Fox would verify that.
And can you, Colonel, come up here and give me a report on the enforcement aspect of there?
Apparently, law enforcement has issued 14 summonses in the change order. 11 of those summonses were issued for uncalled oysters. 2 were issued for no license, and 1 was issued for leaving the dock too early in the morning. I received information that some of the watermen were concerned that certain buyers were not being checked. All of these summonses were issued to those buyers that the watermen had concerns about. And every Marine police officer we have is on day duty checking the oysters in the James River in this area.
The members of the committee were commenting that they were seeing a large number of oysters from the James River that were undersized. Ken Smith, who's president of the Virginia Watermen's Association, shucked oysters at the Reedville Fisherman's Museum oyster roast, and he said that they had James River oysters, and you'd get one box of beautiful oysters, and then the next would all be 2 and 2.5 inches long. And he said that somebody is buying them, somebody is selling them, and he wanted that, and he and the other watermen all wanted law enforcement to stop that.
Well, we can try to do that, and I don't mean this flippantly, but you can write speeding tickets all day long, and by God, there's still speeding.
Oh, sure.
And with the number of officers that we have, and you heard the colonel indicate they're all deployed to one specific issue right now, which, as commissioner, has me just a little worried and concerned about the enforcement of other resources that we have to manage as well. I think they're doing a pretty good job, best they can, what they've got to work with. Mr. Schick?
Yeah. Now, in past, when we've had some of that, we confiscated gear and took licenses, and is that what's happened here? Or
no license or gear has been confiscated. We've reviewed some of those laws, and law enforcement feels that it's best to go to the habitual offender status and deal with it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That way it follows the law more closely.
Well, I'm sure that the action that has been taken in the past few days, which you just referred to, is going to send a message, and I think that's going to be well received by the lawful people, and probably received very clearly by the unlawful people too.
But to clarify, this has not just occurred in the last couple of days. This has been this wasn't spurred by the comments that were made by the committee. This has been an ongoing thing. So it indicates to me there may have been some misperception of lack of law enforcement by the committee. This isn't just
that could be.
Yeah. So it's the same situation. Where's a policeman when you ever need him? But boy, when he's there and you don't want him, you got problems. But anyway.
But there's been a lot more activity down there in general, legal. So that's going to, of course, bring more illegal activity by percentage if it's a
thank you, Colonel.
Situation.
I think the other thing that's going to help the situation in the James is the permanent marking of some of these lines that Jim showed you. We are actually contracting to have telephone pole size markers, put out there.
After we receive approval by the United States Coast Guard, of course.
So they're a little bit harder to move than buoys.